welcome back to the Great and Terrible AHS. We're here to talk about the second half of this episode. Oh, man. Sorry, I just looked at the notes and remembered what we're about to get into. Shit. Well, I'm here as always with Miss Shadow Lovely and Slow Beef. Hey.
Yo.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, man. So, we ended in like a really confusing, strange scene of someone like working really hard to be hateful to somebody that it doesn't really make sense for them to be hateful towards.
Oh, yeah.
The pharmacy with Paul. Yeah, where like Paul's just like, hey, I'd like to buy some perfume. And he's like, I've decided I'm having a problem with you today. No, you can't.
Yeah, this is, I forgot to mention last time, but like also it bears like repeating that this is like post the town being pro freak now. Like they're like on team freak after Jimmy saved the town.
Jimmy saved the children.
Yeah.
Well, somebody, some pharmacist didn't get the memo.
Yeah,
so.
He's too busy working. He didn't hear about the serial killer or anything. Yeah. And then Dandy got busted for having, quote unquote, having the twins, as though that is a problem. Cannot state enough that the twins are fully agent.
Got caught by buying two of things for heads.
Yeah, they can't
take truly the most stupid way possible. Like, I need two hair bands and two combs and two sets of matching glasses.
Yeah, these two cannot share anything. Even though they do use the same hands, like, and, you know, because of that, more than likely only one of them is going to be using the brush at a time. Because they don't have four arms. Probably don't need two brushes, all things considered.
God, that would be such a... I'm almost amazed that they didn't also have him buy, like, on top of two headbands, two brushes, two pairs of glasses, just, like, one pair of gloves.
Yeah.
Just, like, really seal it of, like, well, there's only one person this could be for.
No, she's two ladies. I know the show doesn't want us to remember that, but we gotta remember the twins are two ladies. It's not just Sarah Paulson and green screen. It's two ladies.
Sorry, I should be more clear. There are two specific people that are always in close proximity that this could be.
They're always sharing gloves, it turns out. There's one character that always shares a glove with another character. You're never going to guess who it is. But again, like, he gets, like, quote-unquote busted, and the show will treat it like he's been caught, like, having kidnapped the twins. The twins are, for all intents and purposes, free to leave anytime they want. They just don't ever try or consider that they can. For some reason.
They cut the scene. Specifically, it's between the end of the last episode and the beginning of this episode where the deal goes down, where the twins are now just in possession. And they treat it like it's a kidnapping, but like, it sounds like Elsa got paid and the twins were like, yeah, all right. Like, I don't see how it could have gone down any other way.
It's very odd. Yeah.
That is,
like, they treat it like they have to be found. You know what I mean? Like, these twins, like, where could they have gone? And then it's like, well,
found and saved. They're like playing up the damsel in distress. Like, oh, we have to go rescue the twins. Also, it does this thing. I don't really know if there's like a word to describe it. And like, this is not an uncommon. Stupid's a great word for it. I agree.
I didn't even know where you were going, but I'm like, I bet it covers. Anyway, sorry. Yeah.
Like, other media does this in a way that it's not like annoying and obnoxious, but like for some reason, this show specifically does it in a way where I'm like, well, I don't want you to do it because you do it wrong. Which is like we as the audience know it is dangerous for the twins to be around Dandy because Dandy kills people. We know that. They don't, but yet they're having those characters act like they do know that Dandy is dangerous.
Yeah, I hear that.
Yeah. It's the whole thing of like, they have a beautiful deep well of tension they could access via obfuscated information, via the like the asymmetry of we know there's danger but the characters don't, so they could have the characters kind of like you know, for lack of a better term, kind of toddle around and, you know, like get into things that are too dangerous because they don't realize it's dangerous. And then the audience is sitting here going, oh, shit, oh, shit, oh,
yeah,
shit.
Exactly,
and the characters are just kind of oblivious. Whereas, yeah, you're absolutely right. Like the twins are like so like shields up against all these dudes and it makes no sense. Like Dandy, again, I think you mentioned it a couple times last time, Liz, that Dandy's just like trying to be a nice, good man to them. Like, is he still a little weird? Yeah, of course.
Right.
Is he clearly like trying to be positive and nice to them and like do things for them? Yeah. Like, I think at best the twins would have like a little bit of a like, you know, being put off by him, but still like mostly accepting of what he does. Cause it's just like so out of left field to really be super negative to this guy from context of characters. He's not even
as weird as he normally is. He's like toned down quite a bit around the twins, and he'll say later in this episode of our podcast and the episode of the television show, like, yeah, the twins make me like more normal. I can just chill out around the twins. That's why I like them.
Exactly. I don't have to murder the twins, but you know.
Yeah. I can just be like a little weird fancy little guy, but like not like I was before where I was being a weird little creep.
They can fix me.
And like I guess I mean I know they weren't being this smart when they wrote it into the show, but like
no,
by having I don't remember which one's the smart one, dot bet, whichever one's the like dopey one, yeah, whichever one's the like kind of dumb airheaded one. They, like, have her, like, fall for Dandy. And I'm like, yeah, that's, like, that makes sense. Because, like, he's just, like, nice. Like, he...
Yeah.
Aside from, like, him being, like, a little weird, which I think if it was me and, like, I didn't have any contextual information about Dandy, period, like, I guess I would maybe be a little off put by like how he acts, but I think I might write it off as like, well, he's like obviously a sheltered rich guy. So like he doesn't have a lot of like socialization, and he doesn't have a lot of those skills that people get by like being out in the general public most of the time. Maybe that's why he's so weird.
I think, yeah. And I think like we're saying like kind of a similar thing, right? Like around work, which is like, I feel like the show's not doing the right things in terms of like, there should be more tension for the twins that there isn't, because now like Dandy's also like, kind of like, I don't feel like killing people anymore, which is like, also there is no tension at all really here. Like there needs to be just something, like maybe at one point Dot and Bet mentioned leaving. And he's like, no, you can't. Or you know what I mean? Like there just needs to be some kind of duress or something outside of like, I don't know, you know,
or
what
like,
are we doing here?
I mean, as much as like it would have been like cheap and like it would have been a little annoying, it would have even made sense if at some point, like Dandy just like could not break his habit of like throwing a tantrum, and then when like Dot like pushes back against him, he like gets maybe a little violent and like breaks something, like something that like a normal person would see that and be like, that's a red flag. Like that's a big red flag.
Or he like comes back in the middle of the night and they're getting up to go to the bathroom and they see him waltz in fucking dripping in blood or something like that. And then they have this, oh my God. And then they realize, but he doesn't realize, they realize. And then we have like a great form of tension. But
perfect.
Alas, poor Yorick. we just didn't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, it puts us as the audience in like kind of a weird position because like, because he never gives the twins a red flag and only we, the audience, know that he's like dangerous or at least was dangerous. It puts this like at least where we are right now in the story. There's like this weird dynamic of like, oh, well, like if they like commit, if the twins mostly, I guess, Dot, commit to what she says she's going to do. And that's to like be nice, play nice until he can fund her surgery. Which she does a dog shit job of doing, by the way. Beefs it on like day one of pretending to be nice. which I feel like isn't that hard because he's not like that bad right now. But like, anyway, it puts us in a weird situation where it's like, well, I mean, if she's like pretending to be nice And, like, mm-hmm. Bette's super into it because she really likes him. And he's happy. And he's not killing people. It seems like this is, like, the best possible outcome for everybody involved in this specific plot line. And we probably shouldn't end it. It seems like the twins are in, a good situation, kind of. Like, the best situation they could probably hope for, given their circumstances.
If it weren't, like, objectively better for them to have died in pink cupcakes, then this would be an okay ending. You know what I mean? Like, there's sort of weird happy ending for the show, I guess, right? Like, you know.
Yeah, because for a character like Dandy, usually characters like that don't get A. Like, aside from, like, Kylo Ren, but we probably shouldn't be, like, lauding that as, like, a great mark of filmmaking. Like, most characters that do irredeemable things don't get, like, a happy ending. Not that Kylo Ren got a happy ending, I'm just saying. But, like, I don't know, it puts us in a really weird, and I'm not sure what they want us to feel. Like, clearly they want us to be, like, nervous, because it's, like, I think they want us to feel, like, the same sort of tension, like, in American Psycho, when, like, a woman is with,
Patrick Bateman.
They don't know that he's, like, super dangerous, but the thing is, Patrick Bateman is gonna kill those ladies. so, like, there is danger there. So it's not like a weird fake sense of danger.
There shouldn't have been like a what are we doing here kind of seems like
also
bent to this.
Here's another free way they could have fixed this probably. So let's say the twins were sold against their will but are like kind of into it. You could even have one of them be kind of into it and hey, remember how last episode the twins' life what their lives were saved? Collectively by being like we're actually too interested and too invested in this whole idea of being in show business so we can't eat a cupcake because we actually care a lot about being on a show now we think that's like a big deal for us and like they could have had it so maybe they wanted to leave for that reason so then there was a push-pull of Dandy will be dangerous if they decide to leave that kind of thing
absolutely yeah.
No, instead we're, like, left with this weird middling, almost, like, I will say a lot of this episode feels like a fanfic. Feels like they let, like, Archive of Our Own write several chunks of this episode. Because, like, there are so many, like, pairings and romantic interactions that had no prior interaction with one another in this episode that like
that's a good point actually
that this is basically fanfic
so if we're going off the old American Horror Story lens of they were reading Reddit reactions to it and then rewriting stuff like two episodes down the line do you think they were like oh shit no one's getting horny this season we're fucking up we gotta make somebody from people get horny about oh crap
yeah I think like two or three episodes in someone wrote like a crack ship fiction about Elsa and Paul the Illustrated Seal and someone on the writing staff saw it and was like that's great put it in the show
add that in and then 100%.
Someone else was like well those two characters haven't like interacted on screen and then the other person was like who cares
did I
yeah, they're about to.
Your opinion? I'm Brian Falchuk, okay? Now put it the fuck in, stupid.
I'm here to glorify serial killers and get weirdly horny about everyone.
Yeah. Oh, so, I guess...
What do you do every day?
The same, I guess. Pot meat kettle.
She got me again. Goddamn right I did. Now go to Wikipedia and print me out some murderers for the next episode.
Yeah. So like where we left off the
Wait,
last...
Wait, you're telling me two guys committed murder together? They were definitely banging, right? I'm sorry. Okay, let's
get Ryan Murphy salivating at the opportunity to make this historical fiction, quote unquote.
Well, they're related. Stop drilling, you hit oil. It's fine.
Say less. So where we left off last episode was, speaking of the twins and Dandy, Dandy nicely trying to get Dot to, like, open up to him, kind of, but in, like, a weird childish way. And then her just being like, nope, and then her accusing him of lying about Jimmy killing Twisty, which is not true. And then he gets mad because she falsely accuses him of lying. But the show frames it like she's right, even though she isn't for some reason.
Like, he was lying that he did it, but also he wasn't lying that Jimmy didn't do it. Either way, it was just like a weird statement for him to make and a weird statement for her to have that reaction about, kind of overall.
It feels like an error, right? Like the writers messed that up, you know? Like,
yeah, and, like at one point they did have like a cut of this where Jimmy did kill Twisty or something.
Right, yeah.
Because like,
yeah.
I mean,
that makes sense.
I guess Jimmy does know that a ghost killed Twisty, but like, I don't think Dandy does. So I don't think Dandy knows who killed Twisty, but he says that Jimmy was passed out in the bus, which is true, or at least was tied up in the bus. So it couldn't have been Jimmy. He knows that much. So like, ultimately, Dandy doesn't know what killed Twisty. He's just like, oh, well, no one else could have taken the credit for it, so I guess I'll do it. And it just doesn't work out for anybody ever. But now it's time to reintroduce Stanley. Remember Stanley, the guy who has gay porn falling out of his pockets?
Porno.
Yeah. That guy. He's back in the show. Maggie goes to like talk to him and is like, hey, the twins are gone. I know that's going to suck real bad for your plan or whatever. And then Stanley's like, well, we could kill Jimmy and steal his lobster hands. And at that point in the show, I immediately had the thought of Jimmy's like a full grown adult man. There's like a full grown adult woman who's the size of a baby and only weighs 11 pounds. Why would you not simply take her? And then literally the next words out of Maggie's mouth are, yeah, we should do Ma Petite instead. That's way easier. And I'm like, yeah, thank you, Maggie. Thank you, Maggie.
And like, so everyone reasonable is like, oh, they're going to kidnap her and make her. And then Stanley daydreams. He's like, I'm going to put her in a big jar and then I'm going to pour stuff on top of her and it's going to be great.
And then my pants are going to fall down. And oh, wait, why do I keep doing this?
Oh, my gay porn is going to fall out. I'm always getting owned.
Oh.
Well, after that, that's their plan. There's not really a lot of like
also,
grace.
I can't remember it in this version. Does Ma Petite have any agency or like panic at all? Because I know in the later one, they just like she's just standing there waving and like doing butterfly hands and being like hee hee yay, and it's like that's. You're allegedly pouring formaldehyde. Do you know how awful formaldehyde is, like, to be around? Like, it hurts.
Yeah, it's kind of fucked up. In the fantasy version of this scene unfolding, Ma Petite is, like, hooting and hollering and crying and begging to be, like, let free.
Okay.
In case it wasn't obvious to the listeners, she will not do that when this actually transpires.
Yeah, which is, like, wild. And I guess sorry for spoilers, but, like, it's worth mentioning that she does do it now because then she doesn't, and it's wild.
And basically what it shows is that Stanley sees her as having more agency than literally everybody else in the freak show is what it establishes.
Right,
yeah. Stanley imagines her fighting back.
She found some human empathy at least, but
and it kind of unceremoniously transitions to
musical.
Another goddamn fucking musical number.
Yeah.
I'm getting sick of hearing Elsa Mars singing to people. I don't know about you guys.
No. We're doing our Gleason, the Glee season. Here it is. I hate it.
Why?
And yeah, she sings some old song that I don't give a shit about. To Paul.
At least this one's old, I guess. At least this one's from 1938.
Yeah.
Though granted, it was made popular like way, way later, and I'm sure that's the one the writers know. It was from a musical from 1938 called September Song. The musical's
also,
not called that, but the song is called September Song.
credit where credit's due, when they did actually pick an old song that's like era appropriate, it was so boring. I did forget it immediately. Whereas, like, I remember when they sang Fiona Apple and it made me mad. So, yeah. You know, yeah. As far as art leaving an impression.
Although, I will say, I think aside from the David Bowie one in the last episode, I think this one specifically irritates me more than anything, because this one, more than anything, we did not need. We did not need her singing to Paul. Like, that is, it accomplished nothing.
Oh, in the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, in the narrative.
Like,
100%.
We did not need this scene. Like, at least the one with the David Bowie song, even though it was, like, not appropriate, it was, like, to signify a character making a decision and, like, acting on it. Like, it was, like, at least, like, a transitional thing. This one is literally just, we wanted to have Jessica Lange sing again. For kind of no reason. Remember, she does singing stuff. That's important, I guess. Like, we had forgotten that for some reason. They have to remind us every single episode. So she's singing it to Paul. It doesn't do anything for anybody. And Paul's like, all right, well, that was great. Thanks for singing to me. I'm going to go ahead and leave now. And she's like, but we didn't have
Thanks,
sex.
Thanks, I'm soft. Bye.
Like... That shit made me mad soft. I'm leaving.
Wow, I went from half chubbing to none chubbing. Keep it up.
Oh, do you think that's what happened to Dell?
Oh, boy.
He got the old musical number, God. Dick. It's like worse than whiskey dick.
It's whiskey dick. Oh, no, sorry.
I keep trying to have sex, but my wife breaks out into the Sound of Music. Help, what do I do? Am I the asshole?
I got show tune dick again. I'm so...
No. Yeah. But he's like, God. Yeah, I got a lot in my mind, so I can't get hard or whatever. And Elsa's like, all right, well, can I like give you a smooch before you leave? And he's like, all right. And he goes to give her a kiss. And she's like, you smell like Venetian romance, which they've made sure that we know is the perfume that what's her face wears. The other lady who I can't think a penny, his other girlfriend that has been missing from the show until just now. I can't imagine, since that's his like long-term girlfriend that he loves and they're like planning on like running away together or whatever. Like, I can't imagine he's never smelled like that
never
before.
Never smelled like this before.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
But Elsa, I guess, has never smelled him and is like, holy shit, you smell like another lady. What the fuck? And then she's mad. And then he decides that her kind of accusing him of seeing another woman is a great time to bring up the twins for some reason. You know, the twins that everybody in the circus loves. And he's like, everybody.
So this is one of like 15 things that Elsa does this episode that is just agonizing of like, Elsa was being constructed as probably the most interesting, like, neutral character overall. Like, they were trying to give her, like, a lot of characteristics. She had some good things she did, some bad things she did, etc.
Right.
This episode, she just fucking loses her mind and is evil all the time.
Yeah.
And, like, this, weirdly enough, is, like, kind of an initial twist of it of, like... You know, she's obviously been very dismissive in the past about like, yeah, whatever, I'm going to screw all sorts of people. You're my driver. Who gives a shit, Paul? But then like now is immediately very, you know, jealous right away off the bat. And it's like, it would be one thing if like, okay, she's flawed. She does a little bit here and there, but it just like really doubles down over the course of this episode. And I think this is where I first noticed it like tilting over into like, why is Elsa being so fucking mean? And then like, it just starts really like... hitting a fever pitch later in this episode where she just starts treating people like dirt. It's weird.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I think like maybe they're really clumsily trying to, and this is 100% me probably reading more into it than the writers did, but like, I think maybe they're trying to imply that like when that whole thing happened where she was singing for the whole town, and they all started booing her for some fucking reason. That was like her Joker moment.
That's so funny.
Yeah, like granted, I think it would have been my Joker moment too, because those people had no reason to be booing her. That would also fuck with me pretty bad, I think. But like, I think
I would get a job at the steel mill. Yeah.
I'd be like, wow, that was fucked up.
I've decided I'm taking up manual labor.
Yeah.
Like, if one day I logged on to stream and like all of my regular viewers just started like like out of nowhere booing me and like saying I suck, like authentically, I'd be like, all right, well, I guess I'm done streaming.
Yeah.
I guess that was a good run for me.
That would be the funniest day of my life. I don't know how I would react to it or how I would deal with the fallout long term. I'd probably start becoming like a right wing streamer on Kick or something.
Start
like
have a
podcast with the Yeah, I'd like interview the hawk to a lady and start grifting. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. I understand, yeah.
Whatever, if you're gonna boo me anyway.
Unironically, I think that's what the show is trying to tell us has happened with Elsa Mars. Like, she's had her Kickstreamer moment, and like
Elsa Mars Kickstreaming moment,
and like her kick is basically television, and she's like, "Well, guess I'm going to Kick then."
Oh my god!
And like, I guess that's what they're trying to say is like, well, now she's nastier than normal because like she got rude. I guess.
That's the thing, right? Yeah, because like she was never outright like abusive toward the other people in the sideshow. You know, like it was like maybe Munchausen at worst. Like she cares for them and maybe whatever.
Like doting?
Yeah.
Maybe also like a little bit doting on some of them of just like treating them a little bit weirdly like a child.
Yes.
Perhaps peeking at Ma Petite, who literally was in a cuck stroller. A little
just on a little cuck couch in the corner of the room.
Yeah. But yeah, so as you're saying, like Paul mentions like, hey, by the way, we all think you sold the twins. We know you did. We all think you did it. We're pretty sure. And, I don't know if anyone but Paul thinks that.
Yeah, right? Jimmy was even just, like, no, that's not what happened. You know what I mean? I don't believe you, Paul. But yeah, you're right. Like,
I don't even think he's told anyone else besides Jimmy. I think that like it's only been an isolated conversation between the two of them, and Jimmy wasn't into it. So like, I don't think
so
anybody...
So sample size of 1, 0% hit rate. Yeah. Full of shit.
What a garbage bluff. Yeah.
Well, Elsa buys it wholesale, sure. Immediately loses her mind and runs out and wakes everybody up and is like literally runs out to the Amogus table, slaps the button and says emergency meeting and then immediately starts like yelling at everybody, which is first of all it's like uncomfortable because she's just screaming at everybody, including the people who clearly do not understand why she is screaming at them.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't really say at first. She's just like honking at everybody and she like grabs each person individually and is like, oh, when you were living in the shit dumpster under the Applebee's, I saved you and I gave you a home or whatever. Like, and she does that for each person.
I saved you from Diarrhea Planet and this is how you repay me?
Yeah. She just goes through each person, including Salty and Pepper, who, like, they kind of show to, like, not understand what she's saying. And I'm like, why do you even think they care?
To the point that Edward Mordrake just walked up to them and was just like, my bad, not going to give you trouble. Have a good night, boys.
Yeah.
have a good one.
Like, functionally, take it easy. Functionally, they are children to, like, most of the people in this show. Like, why would she even assume that those two... did not trust her, much less like have like some kind of weird strong opinion about anything. Yeah, it's very strange. And she literally goes around to like, I want to say like 90% of the named cast and is like, because there's a bunch of people in there that we don't know their names. There's just some like random people in there too.
Also, hey, if you want to have a good fun time for a musical and you don't just want to like steal stuff, Elsa having a mental breakdown and accusing everybody and going like full accusatory mode, you could do such a fun musical number with this. You could do like the trial in Pink Floyd's The Wall, like do an homage to that sequence, but with Elsa like screaming at everyone point at time. It makes me mad that they blow their musical numbers on the most nothing possible, which as you mentioned, the last one was like the worst. Like they could use their musical budget to push the narrative.
Yeah,
you know?
100%. But
no, we just wanted to have her sing it, Paul, for a little bit.
Glee must have been terrible. You know what I mean? Like that was a whole show around me. They can't even handle one season here. I mean,
a lot of people don't like Glee. A lot of people don't care for it. So,
not shocked.
You might be interested to know. A lot of people don't care for it much.
First, I'm hearing about this. Sounds bad. Sorry, I'll unfollow him right away.
It's really odd because they start to do this thing where they're like trying to trick us, the audience, also. Or maybe, mm-hmm. or maybe they just don't fucking know what they want this character to be. Where they're like, yeah, no, she's genuinely like upset that like the characters that she cares for, like a mother, like a surrogate mother kind of, like, don't trust her. Like, she's genuinely upset about that. But at the same time,
but she did it.
She did do it. So like, she's lying.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, like she did it. Yeah, like
This is a level of manipulation that
she doesn't lash out appropriately.
Yeah, this is a level of manipulation this character has not been shown to do so far. Like, she does manipulate others to do like her bidding, but not in like a really like deep-seated malicious way. It's like don't you want to come live at the circus and whatever, and I can give you clothes. Like, it's not like it's more like dangling a carrot kind of manipulation, not like I'm going to put on this big theatrical, I'm going to fake my own death, and when I come back I will be a different person. Like, it's not like that kind of thing. This is like a wild level of like just lying on Elsa's part and like committing to lying.
Guess like gatekeep girl boss.
Yeah.
I've leveled up my game. Yeah. But yeah, it's like Elsa last episode was like kind of a goofy old German lady who like knew, you know, like had a weird career in showbiz and kind of settled down as like kind of a doting mother type on all of these other folks and like took care of him and sheltered him. And that was most of her character. Like, her biggest flaw was jealous and a little stupid. This episode, she just like turns into Light Yagami for a sec. Like, she's just like, yeah, I have like 12 layers deep of plan of how I'm gonna deal with all of this. And it's like, who are you? What show are you from? You're not Elsa at all.
I know this is an insane thing to say out loud, but it's not even as smart as like Death Note and Light Yagami, because at least Death Note shows us, the audience, that Light Yagami is like the bad guy. Like, the other people don't know that, but we do. We're in on it. Like,
yeah,
we're not in on it. We're not in on it in this show. Yeah. We're just like, what the fuck is wrong with Elsa right now? Why is she crashing out like this?
Yeah,
she turns into Light Yagami off screen for a bit, and then like shows up and is just like, "Hey, I'm really ruthless now."
Yeah.
It's like, but since when?
It's like it's like if Death Note like were suddenly like L is swapped out for Joaquin Phoenix's Joker, and there's like no explanation of anything. It's like, fuck it, new guy. There it is. Like,
okay. Oh, that's what Joker 2's about.
So she's losing her mind at everybody and then essentially says, no one gets to leave until somebody goes up on that wheel and lets me throw knives at them. To which I think everybody would just rightfully say, we're not gonna do that. Friend who doesn't know, usually knife throwing is like you have a spring loaded thing with little trap doors behind the board. So like you pretend to throw a knife and then a thing pops out, or like the audience is only on one side of it. So you can just throw it behind and like miss by a very large amount and still be fine. And then it just pops out of the board. No, Elsa just chucks knives at people. Jimmy, I think like at first is like, I'm the hero of the people, Jimmy, so I gotta get up on that wheel. Put me up on there. I'm the hero. Paul interjects and goes, inexplicably, I'll do it.
Yeah, what would have happened if Paul had not stepped up here? Because I'm sorry, we have to spoil this. This is all supposed to be a big way to punish Paul. This whole next of the episode is all like Paul getting punished for fucking another lady, I guess, as if that's not been going on for some reason. What would have happened if Jimmy was like, Okay.
I think he was being punished for like discovering the crime of her selling the twins, I think. And like the crime of being willing to investigate her and be suspicious of her and not just be fully trusting. Which, yeah, if Jimmy was just like, I'll go on the wheel, and Paul was like, what then?
It is, yeah, it's so wild. And I cannot overstate that, because she gives a little speech before she has people get on the wheel of like, she wants this to be, and again, I cannot emphasize enough, this is supposed to be a trust fall exercise to make the rest of the circus trust her more, because she wouldn't hurt one of them, right? Like, she's definitely going to take care of you and keep you safe. I cannot reiterate enough that this is supposed to be her putting everyone's mind at ease.
If she were to hit someone with a knife, that would just be plus 10 to chaos. Everybody's going ham. Nobody's safe. Everything's off the menu. This is doing a trust fall and then instead having somebody crouch behind them and then push them over. So you're just hitting them with like a blinded tabletop. That's what it would be.
Yeah. And also, usually trust falls don't have the danger, like a fatal aspect to it, too. It's like, you didn't catch me. What the fuck, Bill? And
Really big trust fall. Really big trust fall.
Wow. Sounds like some weak companies. Hey, want to do a trust fall onto these, like, coals people walk over?
I was going to say off the side of a building.
Yo, okay, the catch is really hard then.
That doesn't sound like teamwork behavior. That sounds like self-centered behavior to me. You're gonna have to be more of a team player.
That sounds like me
catching another human being falling at terminal velocity. Yeah, I guess skill issue on my part.
Really gonna need you to pitch in here and pull your weight here at the company. So in case it wasn't obvious, Paul gets on the circle and starts getting knives thrown at him while Elsa gives a weird little speech about fate, which also will not make any sense given how this scene culminates. And every time Elsa throws a knife, every single person in the room's butthole clenches and everybody goes, which is fair, but it also shows that everyone does not trust Elsa to not hit Paul with the knife. And then kind of unsurprisingly, she fucking beefs it the third throw, the third knife, and Paul gets stabbed because he got a knife thrown at him.
Also, hits his ass nearly center of mass. Like, couldn't have not missed more. Borderline just hitting a clean bullseye on the board, and it's like, well, it doesn't matter. You could have put Ma Petite up there and it would have got her. you fucked up. Honestly, that's what they should have done. If they were being smart, they would have been like, can we put Ma Petite up? Ma Petite, you got the best odds.
And Elsa starts sweating like, no. And like, so now she's impaled Paul. So like in the best of circumstances, if they don't think this was malicious for whatever reason, and not just like an act of anger, at best they think that they can't trust her because she will put them in harm's way on purpose. So I don't really know what her end game was here, because now she's just sowed even more distrust amongst her troop of people. So.
Mm.
I don't fucking know. It's time to take a brief interlude to somewhere that none of us want to be, which is Penny's house. She tries to sneak out, even though she's like 35, and her dad aims a shotgun at her, and she decides that having a shotgun aimed at her is the perfect time to tell him to go fuck himself for the first time in her life. And then she's like, what are you going to do, shoot me? And I'm like, I don't know, man. He's got a shotgun trained on you. So it seems like he might. Usually someone like that wouldn't aim a gun at their child if they weren't also willing to do it.
Right.
Yeah, if I were to make a list of likely actions coming up, shoot would be on the top 10.
Yeah, top three, I would say. Yeah. For my list, top three. It's up
there. Lower gun. Fire gun. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's probably top three. Yeah, and she's just like, no, I'm going to go. Don't follow me. Don't bring weapons. Come to the Pillar of Wasp Eggs at the circus. It's fine. So back at the circus, Maggie just kidnaps Ma Petite. And by that, I mean Ma Petite is going to turn into a baby that has no senses for the next bit to be convenient. They needed Ma Petite to be an object. And so Ma Petite is going to regrettably act like an object. Mm-hmm. It sucks. It sucks so bad.
A very interactive Maggie, Furby. Like,
yeah, like, yeah. Maggie literally, like, picks her up, and Ma Petite's just like, oh, okay. Is it Ma Petite asks, like, oh, are we getting a pony or something? Yeah. Like a very child question?
Kind of. Maggie says, like, we're gonna go, I need to show you something very special. And Ma Petite's like, oh, a pony? And Maggie's like, well, maybe. I don't know. I guess we're gonna have to find out. It's like, oh, okay. Cannot repeat enough that if this was just a child, there would be no point in her being at the freak show, because it would just be a baby that everyone's kind of carrying around, which is weird.
Plenty of those.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dime a dozen.
Yeah.
Babies.
Yeah. People don't really pay to go see those usually.
All over the place.
Yeah. But no, she is currently, even though she's a grown adult woman, she's currently baby plus, boss baby mode.
So Maggie takes her out to a prairie with a jar and lowers Ma Petite into a jar, which, look, there's a lot of vessels I'd be fine being lowered into, but as soon as you put me in something that seems like it's a test tube with like slick walls that don't look like I'm supposed to be able to get out of it, I'm like worried.
Yeah,
I think
that's fair. I think that's totally fair.
Yeah. Ma Petite is not worried and just keeps doing like butterfly hands and everything, and then it shows Maggie getting ready to pour what I presume is supposed to be
formaldehyde.
Formaldehyde and like other preservatives and stuff like that. Yeah, exactly. And again, look, if you've never been around formaldehyde or like in that kind of medical setting, you know formaldehyde's in the room. It's not, it's like one of those things, it's like almost like an ammonia salt where it smells so strong. It is not missable. It's one of those things where like even if you were a baby, you'd be like, ooh, ah, my nose hurts. What the? As soon as somebody opened a jar of formaldehyde near you, you'd be like, ow, it hurts on the inside of my face. Like, you can't really fucking miss it, you know?
Ma Petite's too excited about being in a jar like a butterfly or whatever. At first, I was like, yeah, it's kind of weird Ma Petite's not like, you know, objecting to being put in this jar. And then I'm like, well, people are like always putting Ma Petite and stuff in this show. Like, she's in boxes and pumpkins. Like, she's used to it by this point. Like, this is probably the least weird part of her night, honestly. and it cuts away before we see her dump the liquid, in case that's
I
not
swear
obvious.
To God, it was just like Ryan Murphy's like, I need a person who can also be an item in someone's inventory. Great news.
And a morality test. She has to also be a morality test for a character.
Yeah. If you're cruel to her, it's obviously fucked up.
Yeah. And you're irredeemable. And so then Penny shows up to the circus to be like, where is the love of my life, Paul, the illustrated seal? And everyone is sad sitting at like a picnic table, like, wow, you got real shit timing. Paul just got stabbed, like, big style. and then it cuts to Elsa, who's with Paul in Elsa's like tent, I guess. Mm-hmm. And she gives him like some opium. And now she's like being rude to Paul. And like the reason why I say I think this is about Penny is because she goes like, that's what you get for betraying me. And I'm like, well, he didn't like rat her out to like everybody, but I guess she doesn't know that. They really make it seem like it's because of the Penny thing, which makes an equal amount of nonsense, if we're being honest. But then again, this whole thing, this whole like love triangle is nonsense. So it doesn't matter, I guess. This will be the first of so many times that Paul and everyone else will be like, so when does the ambulance get here for my stab wound? And Elsa will be like, oh, I don't know. They're just really taking their time. And then about 5 minutes will elapse and another person will be like, hey, why isn't the ambulance here yet? And Elsa will be like, I don't know. They're being so crazy. And then like a day will elapse and everyone's like, damn, that ambulance is really taking its time. And Elsa's like, I know. They got such a slow response rate out here. That's so weird.
Elsa, you did call, right?
Yeah.
Of course. Why would me, the person who threw the knife, have a vested interest in not calling the ambulance? Don't be ridiculous.
How could you ask me that? Get up on the wheel.
Yeah,
on the wheel with you.
Yeah, no other person, including Penny, who has just gotten here and is like, where the fuck is the ambulance? Like, Penny, who out of everybody has no reason to fucking believe Elsa, is just like, did you call an ambulance? And Elsa's like, mm-hmm. Well, like, twisting her fingers behind her back. Yeah. And then, and Penny does not, like, call the ambulance herself. She's like, okay, well, I believe
checks
you.
Out.
That yeah, that seemed believable. You didn't seem super cagey about that answer. Literally, then it cuts to the next day, and Jimmy's like, damn, ambulance has taken a long time to get here. And then he doesn't call the ambulance either. And, like, even he has kind of, like, a moment where he's like, damn, I kind of told Paul that I thought that Elsa didn't sell the twins, but now I'm sort of thinking that maybe I fucked up. And then he still doesn't call the ambulance. And then Amazon Eve, like, kind of interrupts Jimmy, who's, like, talking to, I think, his mom, and is like, oh, the ambulance never came. And then Amazon Eve is like, oh, we got another problem. Ma Petite is missing, which kind of, like, is like, okay, well, we're going to get into this now. And then they go outside, and then that plot line
cool,
is
there's
immediately
another,
done.
Finally, tension. Oh, okay, never mind. Yeah, because yeah. Literally walks out the door, and Maggie's just holding Ma Petite and is like, yeah, we played a funny game where I put her in a jar, and then I took her back out of a jar, and now we're home. Don't want to talk about it.
Yeah. She's like, yeah, I was hanging out with this not-baby, adult-grown woman catching fireflies. Don't worry about why I'm suddenly so invested in this person. All right, bye. And then Jimmy's like, that seems normal. I'm still not going to call the ambulance for Paul, though. And then Maggie's like, hey, Jimmy, apropos of nothing, we should run away so that no one cuts off your hands. And he's like, huh? And then she's like, you want a kiss on the mouth about it? And he's like, hell yeah, I do. And then that's what they do. Is they start sucking face. Fuck Paul, I guess. He's still bleeding out in Elsa's tent or whatever. And then Jimmy's like, I got one.
He's got as much opium as he needs.
Yeah.
He'll be fine.
The AC's on and his favorite show's on in there. Don't worry.
What are you worried about, Paul?
The medicine of the red flower. It's fine.
Get out of here,
fine.
Worrying about Paul. Jeez.
No one has
Take
ever
of
died
himself.
Of a stab wound. Like, historically, I don't think you can prove a single person's ever died of a stab wound. So he's probably going to be fine.
Here, you know what? Let's ask Paul. Paul, how do you feel? Great.
He's
See,
fine.
He feels
yeah,
great.
Exactly.
It's fine.
Elsa.
He's doing
I'm
good.
I'm using him like a ventriloquist dummy. I feel fine. Yeah. But in like a slightly German accent.
I feel
oh,
fine. Hello, ambulance driver. Yes,
yeah,
I'm coming.
Doing
much,
great, yeah.
Much schnell.
And then Jimmy's like, okay, Maggie, we can run away so no one cuts off my hands. That's a weird thing for you to bring up, but I'm not going to revisit it. I do have to go do something, though, before we elope. And I'm like, oh, I wonder if it's call an ambulance for Paul. Spoiler no, alert, it's not. it isn't. Now Maggie's like, okay, hell yeah, I got Jimmy to agree to elope with me or whatever. I got to go pack my shit up. She does that. She goes to her weird little tent, and Stanley, you know, her partner in crime, is just in her tent waiting for her, which is honestly not that surprising of a place for him to be, all things considered, because where the fuck else would he be?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, that's like his spawn point, I think, for the circus. And then he gives like a weird, like, evil man speech about like, oh, this is my ticket that I was going to use to go to the museum in the other state tonight, but I'm going to have to cancel it. And there's so many fees involved and rescheduling. And I already called the museum and said I was bringing them a little lady.
It's like weird because they like, he needs to be more intimidating. Like, I'm sorry. They like picked the wrong actor for this. Like, if they wanted to write this character this way, he just can't sell being scary about this. Because, like, the idea of a guy being very threatening and getting worked up about paperwork can absolutely work. Like, that could definitely play. But it's like Stanley, the funny little guy who drops his porn. Like, he's just not a threatening individual. So it just comes off as, like, weirdly whiny.
Yeah.
He's just like, and I'm not gonna have a thing to give him, and everyone's gonna make fun of me for not having a little baby-grown woman at the baseball game. And it's just like, who cares?
Also, like, for me, at least in this scene, it really hammered home how, like, impotent of a character Stanley kind of is, because I'm like, there's so much chaos going on right now that, like, Maggie was able to, like, kidnap Ma Petite for all intents and purposes. Like, clearly Maggie's got some hesitation because she has said to him multiple times, like, I didn't agree to kill anybody.
He could just walk over and take Ma Petite and be like, mission accomplished.
Why doesn't he just fucking do it? Like, he almost killed the twins, but then, also, why didn't he just kill the twins?
That's what I said, like, but, like, he has these intricate plans for no reason. Like, you just do it, they're there. Like, you know.
John Kramer from Saw,
just
but
take
bad.
The cupcakes. Take the cupcakes with you, and also take an extra syringe of the poison. You know, in case the cupcakes don't work out.
Yeah, like, not just have them not work.
You fantasize smothering one anyway for some reason. You know, like, my come on, like, what gives?
I'm like, why are you making this, like, small little lady, like, who clearly doesn't want to do this, like, do it? Like, why don't you just do it? Like, no one's stopping you. Why are you even pretending to be
Stanley.
A TV guy at this point?
Stanley, don't let your memes be dreams. Baby in a jar.
Yeah.
You can do it.
We believe in you, Stanley.
You can do it. It's all here, Stanley. The pieces are all in place. It's all turning up, Stanley. No, I gotta make Maggie do it. Why? I gotta.
Oh, my boy. That's how it works.
Yeah, also, there's, like, not really an explored reason, nor does the show really care, a reason why Maggie wouldn't just, like, rat him out.
Right?
Like, be like, yeah, this dude is forcing me to, like, pretend to be whatever, and he's actually trying to kidnap one of you to, like, Jimmy. Yeah. That way all of the freaks could just kill him or something. Like,
yeah,
because, like, they killed a cop already. By the way, in case you forgot, they killed a cop.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dan, that's crazy. The cops kind of forgot about it. It's fine. I'm sure we'll never come
I think
up again.
We were hoping the audience
I mean,
too.
They killed me. So they got their pound of flesh, I guess.
He was the best of us.
Fucking
he
Meep.
Was the best
I
of
hate
us.
Meep so much. They've made me hate Meep by bringing him up too much.
I used to love Meep, but now I hate Meep because of what they've done to my boy.
Look, I was Meep ambivalent before, but certainly not now. The hell with Meep.
So back to Dandy and Gloria and at the Mott house, Dandy is, burst into tears because regrettably when Dot and Bet did their whole thing about, like, you can't look at our diary, it's where our secrets go. And we don't read each other's minds about our diary or whatever,
I guess.
So Dandy was like, I'm getting in that diary, and did easily with no conflict, but unfortunately found out that Dot was writing down mycrimes.txt the entire time she was there, like a fucking idiot or a mayor of New York City, just immediately putting a whole ass paper trail down of, do you have any, that's a little too obvious of a plane ticket, let's get that down. Oh, God. And so Dot, like, just straight up wrote, like, I hate this guy. I can't stand this guy. He talks about shit and he's boring. I think he's a fucking wad, but at least he's got the money to fund the surgery for me to legally murder my sister. Thank God. And then I can, like, then I can kill the woman he loves and also not be the thing he's interested in anymore. How based is that?
Yes, he has a tiny weenie. I'm sure of it. You know, like, it's just...
And I bet he's a serial killer or something.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, Dandy's, like, not jazzed about it, understandably. Like, I mean, I think most guys wouldn't be if they found out that one of the women they were dating were like, this guy fucking blows, dude. I'm just with him for his money. Most people don't like that. I don't think this is a Dandy-specific reaction.
Yeah, I was going to be like, I heard being poly took some emotional maturity, but this is a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot to handle.
Usually one of the issues isn't that one of the direct people I'm dating hates my guts. Usually that's not one of the issues I find.
But is regrettably attached to the one I love.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very specific also, Rodney, like, Dangerfield.
I mean, I guess the caveat here is that he wants both of the twins to love him. But, like, in real life, when this situation happens, you just have to, like, discuss it like adults and be like, all right, I'm in love with your sister. But clearly you guys are, like, connected. So, like, we have to set some boundaries and some ground rules and talk about, we have to have a lot of communication about this relationship.
I'm pretty sure you have to do this if you get married to, like, a not attached twin.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure you still have to have this discussion of, like, okay, here's the list of things you and your twin are allowed to fuck with me with. And here are the things where you cannot.
I brought Dell for pre-Cana in this specific.
Exactly. And then Gloria is like, oh, well, it's okay. At least one of them likes you. You could try and make the one that hates you like you. And he's like, I don't want to buy her love, mother. When I was a kid, I had tuberculosis and you took me to Utah. That is not me doing a bit. That is what he says.
That went over my head. Like, if there is some joke in there, or, like, that's why Dandy turned out that, you know?
No. So, that was, like, an old, like, form of very expensive treatment that I'm pretty sure would have already been outdated of, like, take somebody who has, like, some form of pneumonia or something associated with it. Yeah, someone, exactly. Someone who's got wet and take him to the dry as much as possible to cure it.
You gotta dry him out.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense, right?
You gotta dry him out. Boy's too wet. Boy's wet.
He's got a case of the wet.
Like, gotta dry him out.
Yep. Gotta take him to Utah.
Take him to Utah. Throw him in the desert. Get him dry. He's like trying to say, like, I was feeling like that all the time, and now I see Dot in bed and I feel like I'm good again, and I'm wet, but it's good.
Yeah. He says, like, the whole Utah thing culminates with him being like, that big empty desert you dropped me in, that's how I feel on the inside, is I feel like that desert, big and empty and, like, gross. And then, like, the last thing he says is unfortunately kind of a bar, I fear. He's like, there's nothing left inside of me but the dust and scorpions. I'm like, kind of a banger, not gonna lie. Kind of a hard line. Wish it wasn't Dandy that said it. And then, yeah, now he's a sad rich romance lover boy who isn't a serial killer. Just kidding. He's back to being a serial killer 35 milliseconds later, because he's like, all right, mother, I'm going to pull out this medieval dagger from my toy chest. I gotta bring death, whatever the fuck that means. To who? I don't know. Whoever's around, I guess. Then the doorbell rings at the least optimal time possible. And he's skulking out of his room, and they have this, like, absolutely insane front door that is 100% see-through. Just a nightmare front door, truly. As someone who grew up with a front door that was mostly glass and you could clearly see into the house, that shit fucking sucks, let me tell you. That shit is a privacy nightmare.
And I think the assumption would be that, like, Dandy and Gloria would be, like, on an estate with, like, gates and fences and security and whatnot. But apparently fucking not, because Jimmy just walks up and is like, hey, heard you got some wings. Hey.
Yeah. So it's Jimmy. Jimmy's like, hey, I know where you live for some reason. That's not weird at all. We don't have Google or anything, but I figured it out. I like figured out where you live outside of town. Hey, what's up? And then it's kind of funny because it's Gloria who answers the door. And Jimmy's like, hey, I'm here to talk to your son. I'm one of his friends. And Gloria goes, my son has no friends. And I'm like, God damn, that's, Gloria. That's fucking pretty relax.
Good. It's good, though.
It is pretty good.
You know, it's good she's realistic and has an accurate picture of her son.
Yeah. Don't worry about any of this, though. It's not important. Also, in this scene, it's shot from over Dandy's shoulder. And he has the medieval dagger just like shoved down the butt crack of his pants. I know writers who use metaphors and they're all fucking cowards is all I'm going to say. The knife behind the back metaphor, show it to them. They have to see it. Otherwise they won't know. They won't understand that Jimmy's in danger. We're back at the circus. Ethel gives a slice of the cake that she made to Elsa. Everybody else is hanging out with Paul, who's not dead, and no one has called an ambulance for. Elsa's like,
what do you mean? Elsa called it. They're just really, they're taking their time. Yeah. It's what, like 3 days? Yeah. Big season.
Yeah.
I'm not worried.
Real busy in Jupiter, Florida, turns out. And then, like, Elsa tells a weird story that no one gives a flying fuck about, including Ethel, about, like, an older sister she had who died as a baby or something.
She should write for American Horror Story. Oh, I'm sorry, Brad.
Yeah. And then she gives Ethel a little kiss on the head, like, mwah, you're my best friend. And then she's like, I love everybody so much in this circus. They're all my babies. I love them. You're my sister that I never had. Remember earlier this season when Ethel was dying of, like, liver failure? The show doesn't. I'm just asking we do.
Yeah. No, Ethel is now the funny little, like scratch and grounder. She follows around. She's just like, yes, boss, to Elsa. That's what she's going to be for the rest of the season, I think.
Except for this one moment, because, like, it kind of reads that way in this scene where Elsa's like, Ethel's the one who I really have under my thumb, because, like, she's even given me cake, even though I just fucking stabbed Paul. And she's not with Paul right now, so she's definitely on my side. But then, like, after Elsa stops talking, Ethel's like, if I find out that you're fucking lying, I will fucking kill you. I will murder you myself with my bare hands. All right, cool. Good talk.
Good talk.
One more pivot before we close the episode. We gotta have one more character just change motivations and, like, actions and being.
Yeah, and there's, like, there's a candle on the cake because it's a fucking birthday cake.
Right.
And then Elsa does not respond to Ethel saying she will fucking kill her. And instead blows out the candle, and we hear her wish in her mind, which I guess, like, could have been a plot device to give us some information. But instead they use it to make Elsa give a weird, pathetic little, I just want to be loved. Then...
Yeah. You know, I gotta give credit where credit's due. A lot of shows, American Horror Story included, are willing to, like, ground episodes around a holiday, you know, to give you, like, an explicit pastiche or, like, an explicit feel of what the episode or the environment or atmosphere you're gonna run into is gonna be like. Very few are, like, a character's birthday week. that's what it is. Because that's what the framing device of this episode is. If you're wondering why was she blowing out a little candle at the end, wasn't the opening her getting presents?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, imagine being someone who's like, yeah, we gave her presents and then she stabbed one of us. Oh, so you're not giving her the cake, right? No, of course we're giving her the cake. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, don't give her
it's
cake.
It's her birthday week. Are you crazy?
You don't get your cake if you stab Paul. Fuck off.
She calls an ambulance for him, Ty. Jesus, how much more do you want?
Bad job. Bad job. You know what? Your cake budget is going to the ambulance. That's what I think.
Oh my god. So that's the episode. That's it. What was this one titled? I forgot.
Bullseye.
What was this one called?
Bullseye.
Oh, Bullseye. Get it? Because she hit the middle of the target, which is not what you're supposed to do in that game. They've right, also yeah. conflated that with darts.
Fuck yeah.
Other cool detail. So we have Del and Desiree, who were just not in this episode. After being like of capstone importance and having the finale scene of the last episode, they just weren't in this one, huh?
Yeah, remember how the last episode literally ended with Del breaking a man's fingers so that he wouldn't perform cosmetic surgery on his wife? Remember that? Remember how that was like a cliffhanger that they just didn't mention?
Forgot that, actually. Yeah, but yep. Yeah. Yeah. No,
and how Del's gay lover was murdered brutally by Dandy. Remember that also? Like something that would be horrific for him to find out and would change the trajectory of that character's, like, you know, plans.
And would give another reason for Del to get re-engaged with the story and perhaps have a revenge plot against, you know, a hunt for Dandy, more or less. Something. Yeah, no, Del's just, he just wasn't in this episode at all.
Neither was Desiree. She wasn't in there either. Neither of them were in that episode.
Yeah.
Penny was in the episode a lot. Gone. I'm trying to think if there was anybody else, any other main characters who weren't in the episode. I don't think so. No, I think it's literally think just them, which is, like, again, they're not, like, part of the main circus, but at the same time, they're the part
ensemble.
Of the, yeah, they're part of the main cast of the television show. They are highly tied to a lot of things.
One of them was being built up as, like, the main antagonist. He went and found the one doctor who was, like, cool about all of this and was just like, I'm gonna break your fingies. Why? Because I feel like it. That's what I do.
Because I don't want you to fix my wife's big clit. I want her clit to be massive for forever.
I need that massive clit, Doc.
How dare you?
Now give me them. Give me that pointer finger. Like, it's, yeah. Yeah, well, I wonder if they'll probably show up in the next episode.
I would hope
what is the name of it? Test of Strength.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, given the name.
They better.
Give me the title. They better.
Yeah, but it won't. The show just finds a new way to let you down every time.
All right. I'll put it down now. I will be so mad if Del is somehow not in the episode titled Test of Strength. And until next time, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.